Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. The economy, both ours and globally, while never simple, just seems to be really, really complicated right now. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Friday today, the 11th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, those complications that I mentioned are big. Record inflation, slowing growth, a lingering pandemic, and oh, by the way, a war. Discuss all that we shall with Lynette Lopez. She's at Business Insider. Catherine Rempel is at The Washington Post. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Lynette, let me start with you. What do you think? Complicated right now, more than usual?
This is so complicated, and it's going to take the world a little bit to recover from the shock of losing certain commodities that we have from Russia, like oil and steel, and kind of moving those around the economy to find a way for us to adjust in the period of adjustment. I think we'll be okay on the other side, and so do my sources who are into this stuff. But that adjustment period is going to be very awkward and painful.
So, Catherine, I was actually on the BBC earlier today, which I guess will be later today because they taped it anyway, their time. And my interviewer asked me how long I thought it would take. And I said, I have no idea. But now I'm going to ask you, that adjustment period, what do you think?
Well, a lot of it depends on what Putin does, obviously. Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, he would back down and then we could go back to some semblance of what things were like before he invaded Ukraine. But absent that, I think it's going to be a while. I mean, the main problem for something like the oil market is that there's a really long lag between the time that prices rise in oil and then you actually get the investments made and more oil commercially available. It, you know, depending on who you ask, it could be something like 10 to 12 months. Less time if there's already a rig on site. But there's even delays between the time that the rig is actually leased and you know, placed at the new drilling location and when you get, several months later, you get the actual oil. So, yeah, this is not something that we can, this is not an adjustment that can be made on a dime. And so it's going to be a little while.
So, Lynette, let's tick through a couple of these things. Catherine alluded to it, inflation. We got CPI this week, 7.9% year on year. It sure looks like it's going to be here for a while. And Secretary Yellen said on CNBC yesterday, yeah, it's going to be another year of high inflation.
Who am I to disagree with Secretary Yellen? Like, you know, she's seen some stuff. No, I have to agree. You know, this changes the picture. And I was talking to one of my sources earlier today who was like, you know, everything that's going on in the stock market, everything that we were seeing with inflation, everything, stocks falling, things ripping higher, inflation ripping higher, it's going to happen harder and faster now than we expected. And that means that some adjustments will need to be made. It's very tricky. Yikes.
Catherine, let me ask you this. You wrote either yesterday or today, frankly, I forget, I apologize, about the Democrats, since this will obviously be a political issue for the Democrats in the fall. Democrats are kind of kidding themselves on inflation and maybe whistling past the graveyard a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's really it's an economic challenge, obviously. It's also a political challenge for the incumbent party, because rightly or wrongly, they're going to get blamed for all economic conditions. Mm-hmm. And look, obviously, President Biden doesn't control oil prices, doesn't control gas prices, doesn't control prices generally. But there have been a bunch of policy choices that were made by the Democrats in charge to run the economy hot. And that means we got really low unemployment faster than we thought, but we also got, you know, some additional contributions to price growth. There's been inflation globally, but even more so here in the U.S. And Democrats kind of don't want to deal with that, yeah. Or at least a lot of Democrats don't want to. And they haven't quite figured out their messaging for what they actually take credit for, what they don't take credit for. To some extent, I think you hear a lot of denial about whether people are suffering from inflation at all. And to some extent, you hear a lot of commentary about like, well, it's just corporate greed. Mm-hmm. And if only we jawbone these companies more, we punish these companies more, they will they'll lower prices. They'll be nicer to consumers, which I don't think is a realistic option.
Yeah, so, I also say no, the economy is actually really good is not a realistic option for Democrats, well, yeah. Which I'm seeing for them do as well.
Yeah, well, talk about that some more, Lynette, right? Because there's you know, the press is concentrating on inflation because, number one, inflation's real and people are suffering from it. But and I suppose we get some blame from, you know, media critics for doing that. But the economy underlying it is really good. But that's not going to sell anybody when they're paying $5.50 for gas out here in Los Angeles or $6.50 on the West Side.
No, not at all. I mean, Democrats say talk about kitchen table issues all the time. And the charts and graphs that we use to explain the economy are not present at the kitchen table when people are discussing these matters.
Right,
so,
right.
So, you know, even if we understand that the economy is growing at a certain rate, then it's not that's not real to a lot of Americans. And politicians need to be able to grapple with that. And say, you know, this is the nature of our economy right now. This is the good. This is the bad, and it's not perfect. I wish people could handle that message. I'm not sure if they can.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, Catherine, let me throw two phrases at you, and I need your reaction. The phrase number one is Federal Reserve, and phrase number two is soft landing, which is, of course, what they are going to try to engineer as they start raising rates next week. Do you think it's possible, or has the idea of a soft landing just gone bye-bye with inflation at almost 8%?
Well, historically, it was, if not impossible, improbable, right? I mean,
right.
Each time that the Fed has raised rates to deal with inflation in the past, you have this huge risk of a recession. And today, we don't know. I mean, it was always going to be challenging for the Fed to deal with that today. The fact that we have this new shock to the system coming from this Russian invasion of Ukraine makes their job even harder, right? Because they're kind of being mm-hmm. pulled in two different directions in the sense that How will all of this affect prices? And it's likely to drive prices higher, as we've been talking about, particularly energy prices, which would lead the Fed to raise rates even faster than they might mm-hmm. otherwise. But on the other hand, how will it affect economic growth? And if it slows down economic growth, which it likely will, in part because of this price shock for oil and other energy prices, particularly in the EU, then that would make them maybe more reluctant to raise interest rates quite as quickly. So, you know, they have kind of this one key policy lever that they rely on, and they're going to get some mixed signals from the usual economic indicators that they use to decide how to use that tool. So it's really challenging. I mean, I do not envy yeah. Fed officials the choices that they have right now. It was always going to be hard, but this war, besides its obvious humanitarian cost, has made the economic calculus even more challenging.
Lynette, last question to you. So Jay Powell has his press conference next Wednesday. He reads the statement and everybody digests it. And then you get the first question. What's your first question to the Fed chair?
Can you stick the landing?
Yeah, good for you. Yeah.
Can you stick the landing? And I obviously, yeah. I just want to hear how he answers the question. Yeah. How hard does he think it's going to be? Because the answer is, I don't know. But here are yeah. my odds. This is how long I think that we're not even talking about supply chain issues anymore, but
no,
those are still there. And now China is having a significant COVID outbreak. And so, you know, what's that picture looking like?
You know what he's going to say, right? He's going to say it depends on what the data says. We're going to evaluate all our options. It depends on what the data says. All right, we got to go. Lynette Lopez at Business Insider, Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, guys.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street today, more down than up. Mitchell Hartman straight ahead, by the way, on reading those market tea leaves that Lynette was alluding to. And as always, details, numbers, you know the drill. All right, so look, let's talk about the stock market here for just a second. Not the usual thing I say, the whole not the economy riff, because who needs to hear that more? But let's talk about what the market can tell us, because it can tell us things. What people, traders, sure, but also moms and pops, what they are doing when they're buying or selling is that they're making a prediction about risk, fundamentally, right? Financial risk, yes, sure, how a given company is going to do profit or loss-wise, but also risk more broadly. And this is what Lynette was alluding to, political risk and geopolitical risk and war risk. And the longer that war goes on, the more market reaction you might expect to see. Here is Mitchell.
Every time I see a headline saying the stock market is rebounding because there's been some change in the war in Ukraine, like a lull in the fighting, a resumption of ceasefire talks, I think, good. The market must think this war isn't so risky and the danger of it spreading is going down. But can the market really predict that? Mark Zandi is chief economist at Moody's Analytics.
The most likely scenario is being told by stock investors and other global investors in the bond market. And, you know, they're upset, worried, and they think the world is diminished by all of this. But they're also saying, look, Russia's a small economy. There's a lot of risk here, but at the end of the day, we're going to navigate through.
The markets are kind of like a collective hive mind, says Brad McMillan at Commonwealth Financial Network, with a lot of information to make up its mind.
Prices represent the considered judgment of everybody who's active in that market. And they're playing for very high stakes. There's a lot of money at stake. So people are really thinking through those decisions.
And deciding, at least so far, with major indexes close to where they were 2 weeks ago, that global risk is up a bit, but not that much. Of course, that could change if the geopolitical situation worsens, the war spreads, involves U.S. or NATO troops, or worse, nuclear weapons, says economist Mary Lovely with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
I think you would see it in global markets if people really thought that, you know, a nuclear war was imminent.
There is a less trusting view of the markets and market reaction to geopolitical turmoil. Kathleen Day studies financial crises at Johns Hopkins University.
In many ways, no one knows. You just don't know. When people liken it to a gambling casino, it is kinda.
And she says if this war widens a lot, then predicting how markets will react gets even harder.
War is unique. War is an existential event. It will affect markets and probably long term.
And not just markets, but trade and travel and pretty much everything economic in the world. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It's good money and it's the best money that you can earn around here.
All right, I'll take it. First, though, let's do the numbers. Really, the Wawa's did not have that on my bingo card. Dow Industrial's down 229 today, 0.7%, 32,944. NASDAQ, well, here you go, off 286 points, 2.2%, 12,843. The S&P 500 shed 55 points, 1.3%, 4204 there. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow off 2%. NASDAQ surrendered 3.5%, S&P 500 down almost 2.9%. New survey from AAA suggests we are planning to drive less as gas prices surge. 59% of people said they would make changes to their driving habits if the cost of gas rose to $4 a gallon. Oh, look, current average price for a gallon of regular, $4.33. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. So, 2 years today, 2 years officially, says the World Health Organization, that we have been living in a pandemic economy. And as we've talked amongst ourselves here at Marketplace World Headquarters about how to, I don't know, mark, maybe observe that milestone, something that Larry Summers, used to be Treasury Secretary, you hear about him a lot, something Summers said on Bloomberg TV this week 2 years ago came to mind.
In a sense, economic time has been stopped, but financial time has not been stopped.
Economic time, people's jobs and paychecks, small businesses and their customers, that all stopped 2 years ago this week. Financial time, rent and car payments, credit card bills, they all kind of didn't. So in March 2 years ago, right after Congress passed that first $2 trillion relief bill, we started following two people.
Hi, I'm Seth Schulman. I'm a musician from Chicago. I'm a teacher and I gig on the weekends.
My name is April Oliver and I live in Bozeman, Montana.
We talked to Seth and April for the first time just as economic time stopped.
The school I work for is not open and I can't teach those students online.
I recently received a job offer from an environmental consulting company. Unfortunately, my employer said that the job offer would be delayed indefinitely due to the fact that the lab is closed.
So that was 2 years ago. Seth is 27 now, still a musician in Chicago. April's 29, actually working that environmental consulting job in Bozeman that she first told us about 2 years ago. And economic life now, well, for them, it's going pretty well, mostly.
I've been gigging and teaching pretty much nonstop.
Last year, I bought a house, my very first home.
Things are still tight, I'm not going to lie. Now, I was a mess definitely 2 years ago. Now I'm kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully.
Back at the beginning of the pandemic, I felt more uncertain and more unstable. And right now, currently, I feel more stable, but I'm more hopeless, if that makes sense.
It kind of does, because there's a disconnect in this economy. On paper, it's really good. Nearly 90% of the jobs that went away during the pandemic are back. There's economic growth. More people are going back to offices and traveling and going out to eat. But some, many actually, people, the economy doesn't feel like it's working for them. Seth and April both got sick during the Omicron surge. Seth is a contractor, so no benefits and no paychecks while he had to quarantine. April has no paid sick time left, and she is still sick 2 months on, using up her vacation time. But their financial time for the two of them, the loans and the debt, that goes on.
I live paycheck to paycheck. I live by every dollar. Could I start paying them now? Yes, but that would also mean I'm literally not saving any money.
Luckily, I graduated without student debt. My partner has student debt for the both of us. Man, once that starts up, money's going to be real tight.
It starts up in May, actually, when the pandemic pause on federal student loan payments expires. April's partner has about $70,000 in student debt left to pay. Seth, around $40,000.
I want to try to save some money. I mean, you can look at discrepancies back in like the 1980s or the 70s, where it was a lot easier to pay off some sort of like student loan debt.
We bought this home hoping to have and raise our kids in it. And how am I going to save for college? I am living paycheck to paycheck still.
Making saving harder for Seth and April right now. Inflation, of course, you know that story, 40-year high in February.
We're like very reasonable kind of like food shoppers. We always get things that are on sale or giant things of rice and beans, as cheap as you can make it. When you start seeing those things go up in price or the price of potatoes, it kind of gets you because you literally live off of that.
I could see households feeling a bit uncertain about that. Even again, as the labor market improves on paper, there still feels like a lot of question marks, not to mention the public health situation.
That's Melanie Long. She teaches economics at the College of Worcester.
economic risks are going to become more individualized again, right? There's not necessarily the political will for or on paper perceived need for further government support.
Seth and April are just two of those individuals trying to get by 2 years after the start of this pandemic. And even though the virus might not be fully in charge of this economy anymore, the changes it brought in how people are thinking about their economic present and their financial futures, those changes are going to linger for a good long while. Upstate New York is in the middle of a gold rush of sorts, a cryptocurrency rush, more like. And the people doing the rushing are cryptocurrency miners whose computers solve the puzzles that keep cryptocurrency systems running and who can earn newly minted Bitcoin if they solve them. Those miners have been heading upstate for a couple of years now because hydropower means cheap electricity for the racks and racks and racks of computers that they are running to mine those Bitcoin. And all those new people and the businesses they bring could be good economic news for cities and towns that have been struggling for decades up there. But as Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports, the locals, well, they're unsure.
On the outskirts of Messina, New York, just a few miles from the Canadian border, a former aluminum smelting plant is humming. A few years ago, a company called CoinMint turned it into what it calls the largest digital currency data center in the world. And when you visit, Director of Operations Ben DeGraw greets you with a warning.
Do you have any sensitivity to noise?
That's because there are thousands of computers inside, and they're all really loud. But it's not just loud, it's dusty. And at 30 degrees, it's freezing.
What we're entering right here is known as our Potline 1.
The term potline is a holdover from this plant's past life. There were rows of aluminum smelters. Today, CoinMint is using three of them. Each one holds 39 shipping containers, each holding 300 computers, all mining for cryptocurrencies. That takes a lot of electricity, and CoinMint came here 4 years ago because, just like the aluminum business before it, it wanted to take advantage of the cheap hydroelectric power here. The plant connects directly to the grid and has an electrical substation big enough to serve more than 200,000 average homes.
We came in, cleaned the place up the best we could, and utilized the existing infrastructure basically to our needs.
CoinMint isn't one of those companies that advertised on the Super Bowl, one you'd go to if you wanted to invest in cryptocurrency. Instead, it does the very lucrative computing work that keeps the cryptocurrency network working. Here in Messina, it employs about 100 people, with plans to bring on dozens more this year. That's a fraction of the 450 jobs here when the plant was last used to smelt aluminum. But plenty of residents of this town of 12,000 people welcome the new jobs.
It's good money, and it's the best money that you can earn around here.
Kyle Jeffrey works as a cook at a local hotel restaurant. He says turning Messina into a crypto haven has been good for the town's long-term prospects.
I think it's a great opportunity. I think crypto is going to be around for a while. It's going to be a big part of our future, and I'm excited to see what happens.
Messina could use the help. It spent decades trying to figure out its next act. A lot of work has gone into making downtown cute. The streets are lined with Pilates studios, flower shops, and art galleries, but there are also a lot of vacant storefronts. Some people here don't buy the whole idea of cryptocurrency.
Techno wizard bull. Yeah, it's not real, but it kind of is because you believe it is, which I think is how magic works.
Still, local resident Emily Champion acknowledges that interest in Messina from crypto miners might not be such a bad thing.
If it's gonna happen, then the least that can happen is that we get some economic benefit from it since the town is limping.
And Messina is certainly getting offers, according to Eric Gustafson, the town attorney and general counsel of the town-owned utility.
What we have found is that every time the price of Bitcoin goes up, the volume of calls goes up with it. That's a pretty direct correlation.
2 hours east of here, the city of Plattsburgh, New York, offers a cautionary tale. In 2018, a coin mint mining facility there helped the town burn through its allocation of cheap power. Rates for electricity shot up, and Plattsburgh became the first city in the nation to temporarily ban crypto mining. Gustafson says people in Messina were watching.
We wanted to make sure that we didn't fall into that same issue. We wanted to make sure that our regular ratepayers were protected.
When interest spiked last year after China banned crypto mining, Messina put a moratorium of its own on new miners. Officials wanted more time to set ground rules and keep fly-by-night operations out of town. The town just extended that moratorium for the second time. In Messina, New York, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which comes with the observation that taxes are on my to-do list this week. And I saw this in the Washington Post, that the Internal Revenue Service is set to bring on 5,000 new hires pretty soon and reassign some people already inside the IRS to, and get this, go after the backlog of 24 million tax returns and other pieces of correspondence that have piled up since the pandemic started. The good news is that in the $1.5 trillion spending bill that is pending in the Senate, there is $12.5 billion for the IRS. That's a 6% bump, its biggest gain in budget percentage since 2001. And yes, I know, don't at me, nobody likes to pay taxes, but look, how do you feel about highways and airports and all that stuff? All right, we are almost out of here, but first, your moment of economic context, which is definitely not what this economy needs. The Susquehanna Financial Group, Bloomberg reports this, says the lag time for semiconductors, that is between order and delivery, increased by 3 days in February. You order a chip today, you get it in 26.2 weeks, which is number one, a marathon, but number two, symbolically also a marathon, 6 months. Come on. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassid is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.